Welcome once again, folks, to All Things Trek, where we talk about things that may or may not be Trek-related, but mostly Trek-related. I'm Bob.
And I'm Oren.
So what's up, Oren?
Well, first of all, I just want everyone to know that we administer 30 lashes every time we talk about something non-Star Trek-related. And with that in mind, I heard you did some ghost hunting last night.
Because I do love me some lashes. Well, you were there, too.
I was kind of there, but I
you went to sleep in the car.
I fell asleep before any serious ghost stuff started happening.
Yeah, which it did. My goodness.
You want to tell people about it?
Tell you what, I was jacked with adrenaline afterwards. So, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, which is, you know, when dead time is supposed to start, right?
Right.
And I head back to the car real quick to grab my watch, because I wanted to make sure I could timestamp when I was doing EVP, which is the electronic voice phenomenon. So you take a recorder, a video camera, and you capture, like, voice. That's what that is. Anyway, as I'm coming back, my recorder unfortunately wasn't on, so I didn't capture it. I heard a voice say, "Don't leave me."
Oh dear.
Yeah, I was just like, "What was that? Jim?" Which is our other friend who was out there with us. He was like, I heard something. Did you say something before Jim? I was like, "Well, no, I didn't say anything. But did you? There was a voice that said, 'Don't leave me.'" So he heard something. I distinctly heard, "Don't leave me." And then later on, when we were actually leaving, I felt something tug on my sweatshirt.
Oh,
and not just like a gentle rustle either. Someone was like, don't go. Also, I was doing a little bit of research actually afterwards, and there are actually some pictures of ghosts walking around in that cemetery that we were at.
Huh.
Interestingly,
this is the Seattle Civil War Cemetery.
Yeah, the Grand Army of the Republic Cemetery over in Capitol Hill is where this is at here, where there is ghost stuff going on of some sort or another.
Right. And for the record, I don't believe in ghosts, but that is pretty freaky. I do believe in being freaked out at graveyards. So anyway,
I was a little disturbed to hear a voice.
Yeah.
Suddenly say, "Don't leave me." Like, woo.
And one more thing before we get to our planned topic of talking about doctors for today. Bob was doing this hilarious foundry mission earlier.
Oh my goodness.
And I wanted to tell you about it because it was pretty pro.
Alright, so this mission is supposed to be based off of Cause and Effect from Star Trek Next Generation, where we have the crew stuck in that time loop or whatever for, how long was it, like 47 days or something?
Well, there is the theory of the Mobius.
The Mobius?
The Mobius.
I don't know about the Mobius.
Don't you remember that? That's like Worf's whole thing, is like the Mobius loop.
Is that what they called it?
Yeah, that's what they called it. And like Worf was the one who knew it for some reason. I thought it was kind of funny.
Alright. Well, anyway, so there's a foundry mission in Star Trek Online that this guy created, I forget the author's name, that's supposed to be based on that. What you do is you're supposed to go find this diplomat that was sent to the Klingon Empire and they got lost on their way back or something. So you go there. You find the ship, the USS Triumph, and they're like, "Yeah, all our stuff's broken. Can you fix it?" And like, okay, we try to fix it a little bit. Klingons show up. We go fight Klingons. Return back to the Triumph, and suddenly my tactical officer gave me this like blood and thunder speech about we have to stand our ground and not go anywhere and defend the Triumph. I was like, "Ooh, okay." So a bunch of Klingon ships show up, and it's supposed to be like two waves of them. And how the scenario is supposed to go down? Because I actually watched a review of the mission prior to playing it.
Spoilers.
Is that you're supposed to get destroyed. Yeah, this is spoilers, by the way. You're supposed to be destroyed.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know many starship captains that would just sit there and take it while your shields are down, because there's the static effect that happens when your sensors go offline and your shields go down.
Yeah, part of the scenario is that the Klingons are infecting you with some kind of virus that, like, takes out your shields and your sensors.
Something's happening. I'm not sure exactly. I'm not clear on all the details as of yet. I think I'm going to probe a little more on that, see what it's all about. But anyway, I decided I didn't want to stick around, because there's a bunch of Klingon ships, so I get out of there, and that's when I find out that the actual area of effect that he's got,
for
the author,
for the shield and sensor glitch,
yeah, is only a very, very small area around the actual USS Triumph that you're supposed to defend. Now, mind you, the ship can't be destroyed, because it's just an object within the universe there.
Yeah, it's not actually
mission.
A ship.
Yeah, it's not actually a destructible object, so the ship was fine, so I just left, and the Klingons didn't follow me.
In fact, they hung out in the "your shields don't work" zone, which
they
apparently
did.
Affected them too.
It did, and it was just like, "Huh, all right, well, I'll just pick them off one by one." And certainly I did. I destroyed them all. And then there I was, with the Triumph.
30 Klingon ships later, we were getting set to record the Empire's worst defeat in history.
Yeah.
But then the scenario couldn't advance.
And then the scenario couldn't advance, because, well, the objective was defend to the end, is what it was, so...
Yeah.
I really think that you're supposed to be destroyed so that, you know, the whole cause and effect, you know, loop would go through.
And start over again.
But
the problem is that Bob's no fool, and he didn't stick around in the horrible no-shield bubble.
Yeah, I wanted to leave that place. You know, I'm not flying Excelsior class, which is decked out pretty much all the top-end gear, Mark 11 purple stuff, and the Borg equipment, so I mean, and some Aegis stuff. I mean, I've got I've got some pretty good gear, so I can take stuff with shields down. That being said, I'd rather have shields. I mean, it's like, I can hang in a fight. And I hung in a fight, and I did it, and I blew them all up, but then I couldn't advance the scenario. So I knew where he was going with it, but I mean, it's just like, huh, I've blown up all the Klingons, now what? Yeah, I guess you want to beam over to my ship, Diplomat Ambassador? How about we evacuate that ship that's a piece of junk over there? Let's go home.
The ambassador's like, no, you're supposed to get stuck in a time loop. Leave this place.
I guess, I don't know. Either way, I did give it a 2-star review because of that, but you know.
I think that was pretty generous, considering you weren't allowed to complete the scenario because you did something reasonably intelligent.
to leave the combat zone?
You know, it's one thing if a scenario has, like, a hole in it that if you do something really weird and unexpected that the scenario stops working, but this was like, oh, look, I left the area where I was being mobbed by ships.
Yeah, I mean, the way to fix it would be to, I think, increase the area of effect that the sensor problem and shield effect is.
Is there just a way to make it so that you can't leave that area? Because, like...
You can't wall it off or anything like that.
You can't? Okay, yeah.
Well, I suppose you could with, like, asteroids that appear afterwards, I suppose. But, I mean, that's the thing you could do. You could just have objects set on certain triggers, like once objective X pops up, you know, materialize these objects here. But I would just increase the whole, like, sensor effect
cloud. Or just,
cloud.
Is there a way to create a trigger where if they leave the area, the ambassador ship is destroyed and you get a mission failed sign? Because, like, that seems pretty reasonable to me. If you've been told you have to stay and defend the ambassador ship and you leave the combat zone, the Klingons destroy the ambassador ship and you failed the scenario.
You know, I don't know, but I think that's something I might actually suggest on the Foundry Forum.
That sounds like the most reasonable way to solve this problem.
You know, but the danger there is if you make the ambassador ship destructible or an actual ship, is that it will fight back and whatnot and repair itself.
Well, so maybe it just... Can it be, like, is there a trigger to replace it with a ship that's exploding? I don't know. That just seems to be the simplest way that I
mean, there are obviously trigger functions in Star Trek Online's Foundry tool, but I don't think they can do the things that you were suggesting they can do at the moment.
Oh, that's too
bad. Which is unfortunate, because, you know, it's going to be hard to do stuff in Neverwinter, because I had some Neverwinter ideas for some Foundry stuff that they're going to... When they put the Foundry tools in Neverwinter, I think they're calling it the Forge, I think, in Neverwinter. But I've got some, like, D&D idea stories that I want to plug in there, but... We've got to see the Foundry tool come a little further, I think, before I can implement them.
Mm-hmm. Alright, so today we are talking about the Doctors of Star Trek.
All that healthy stuff.
Because the Doctors, you know, from McCoy to Phlox, and we're not talking about Pulaski here. She doesn't really count. She was only here for a season.
She was a doctor. Even though we don't like her, she was still a doctor.
Yeah, she was technically a doctor, but she wasn't there long enough for us to really get any idea of her as a doctor.
Nonsense. We got a perfect idea of her as a doctor. Perfectly competent. Terrible person.
We can talk about Pulaski if you want, Bob. I'm okay with that. I'm not prepared to talk about Pulaski, but if you've got things to say...
We'll talk about Pulaski.
Alright. And, like, because, like, you know, historically, the Doctor tends to be kind of the quirkiest character on the crew. Not always, but that's fairly common. At least a 3 out of 5 series, the Doctor tends to be pretty quirky. And they're very often, like, you know, the outside observers of human nature. And Star Trek just tends to do some very interesting things with their Doctors, of course, originating with Mr. McCoy himself, played by DeForest Kelly.
Simple country doctor.
Yeah, he is a simple country doctor, is what he is. Which is kind of funny, because then in Star Trek IV, he's, like, comparing... He's saying that, like, all the modern... All the medical stuff in the in Mercy Hospital is, you know, medieval barbarism. Whereas, like, in the series, he's, like, occasionally mentions how little suffering is good for the soul.
Yeah.
And isn't all about super technology and stuff. But, I mean, obviously, McCoy is a great character. And he's a huge racist... McCoy is like, there's the episode Day of the Dove, I think it is where's the episode where they have a bunch of Klingons on the ship because their Klingon ship was destroyed, and there's like a there's some kind of phenomenon that's making them hate each other more than they normally do.
Well, it's an alien presence that feeds on hate or something like that, or feeds on strong emotions.
Aggression.
It was hate and aggression is what it was, because they had to laugh later to get rid of it, and I recall that specifically because the Klingon captain and Kirk were laughing, and the Klingon, like, backslaps, like, Kirk, you know, it's like a ha-ha friendly thing, and Kirk looks like he's just about ready to punch him, and Kirk's like, no, I can't do that.
Yeah, but that episode is funny for McCoy, because McCoy at one point explodes into this rant about how much he hates Klingons and how horrible they are, and there's this really uncomfortable moment in the turbo lift after McCoy is finished where everyone's really quiet. Subtext is kind of like, you guys ever notice McCoy's a bit of a racist? And, you know, he's always ribbing Spock for, you know, being a green-blooded, inhuman son of a bitch.
With pointy ears,
and always making racial slurs on Vulcans.
Yep.
He's also incredibly sexist. My favorite example of that is probably in Friday's Child, when he smacks this pregnant woman around a little bit, and is lecturing her on what it means to be a woman and what it means to be a mother.
I'm a doctor, not an escalator.
And that, you know, that episode is a little bit uncomfortable. You know, to say nothing of the giant three-pointed throwing stars they have there. But those sorts of things aside, some of which are legitimate flaws, some of which are just a facet of it being the 60s when that show was made. But McCoy is really great. He's from the South, and he's smart. Like, he's a Southern character who isn't just, like, you know, played for laughs of how dumb people from the South are. Which is funny, because, like, Enterprise tried to do the same thing with Tucker and, like, failed miserably, because Tucker is a complete moron. So that's one of the things I like about McCoy. And then, of course, I will always have the image of McCoy from the episode with the confetti plants that made them all super happy. I don't remember
Paradise?
The name. Yeah. Is this Paradise?
I think it's called Paradise.
My favorite thing about... I just love the... My favorite thing from that episode, other than Kirk running around being so mad that everyone's happy, is the fact that McCoy's perfect existence is just him hanging out in a field with a mint julep. That's what McCoy would do if he had his druthers. If he could just do whatever he wanted, he would hang out and be like, I have a mint julep. Enjoy it. He just really loves his mint juleps.
Envelop the mint julep. Make love to the mint julep.
And then after McCoy, we have Beverly Crusher, who is the only lady of the bunch, played by Gates McFadden. Wait. One thing about McCoy that I forgot. McCoy was actually supposed to have a daughter, and canonically he does, because it was put in the series Bible by DC Fontana. And originally, she was going to appear in the fourth season. And of course there was no fourth season.
We all know how well that turned out.
Yeah, there was no fourth season, but she was going to appear in the fourth season. She and Kirk were going to have a romantic relationship, and then McCoy was going to have to interact with that through the eyes of, like, a father, which just, I really imagine this idea of McCoy showing up outside Kirk's corner.
How old is McCoy during TOS?
He's like in his 50s, I think.
His 50s? All right, so how old is Kirk? He's 38 at the end of season 3, right?
Late 30s.
All right. So how old is the daughter supposed to be?
She's in her 20s.
In her 20s. All right.
And, like...
Anyone else seeing a bit of a generational gap here?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, like, obviously. But, like, Kirk has had lots of romances with much younger women. I mean, this was the 60s we're talking about here. Kirk was allowed to have romances with whoever he wanted.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was, like, kind of a lot of one-night stand kind of stuff is what he was doing, you know. Which, you know, I didn't really find... I don't want to say it's acceptable necessarily, but, I mean, it's a thing he did.
I just think
having a long-standing relationship with, you know, someone that's, like, you know, almost 20 years younger than you, there's kind of a significant generational gap.
Yeah, there certainly is. I just really like the idea of McCoy.
I mean, I'm not saying it's sick or wrong, but, you know, it's, you know, and some people do it right now. You know, like, my sister's in that kind of relationship, actually, right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it seems to work okay for them, which, if it does, fantastic. But I just think it's because it's another level of dysfunction.
Well, yeah, don't get me wrong. It totally is. I just really love the idea of McCoy hanging outside Kirk's quarters with a pump-action phaser. Being like, Jim, you're
what
gonna
does
do,
that look like?
Jim, you're going to do right by my daughter? And, like...
What is a pump-action phaser?
I don't know. It's a... I mean, the pump-action shotgun is a thing where, like, the reason they still make them is because the pump is, like, an intimidation value. Like, they can easily make semi-automatic shotguns, and they do make them, but a lot of people, especially law enforcement agents, prefer the pump-action because its sound is so intimidating. So, you know, any kind of weapon that makes, like, a really intimidating... Like, with a phaser, I imagine it would make kind of a vroom sound when you power it up.
Okay.
Anyway, joking aside, I think that would have been interesting to have... like, a different kind of relationship with Kirk and McCoy. I don't trust the 60s to have done that in any way that I would have enjoyed. I think it would have been really kind of uncomfortable to watch. But it was something that was interesting. But anyway, back to Crusher. She was the only one of the Doctors who had a kid actually on screen, and that was Wesley. And we all know how much everyone loves Wesley, right?
Well, at least he wasn't involved in the crew.
Yeah, that's true. Well, he was, but not with any of the main cast.
Not the main cast.
He did have a...
That was Loeffler.
Yeah, Robin Loeffler,
right?
Who I kind of liked, mainly because I thought her acting
Which was Ashley cool. Ashley Judd's acting
startup?
Debut.
Yeah. And too bad, like, she wasn't really in the show after that. And, like, you know, Crusher's main relationship was actually with Picard, and her, like, you know, they were kind of foils to each other. And she was also...
You remember that picture we saw? Or not picture, but what episode we were watching where Geordi was chatting up the 12-year-old?
I wasn't actually there for that.
And Geordi's just spent a lot of time with Wesley.
There's like a background shot of, like, I forget who's in the foreground, but, like, Geordi...
That was Menage a Trois, right?
Was it? It
I might think have been. So.
But, like, in the background, there's a shot of Geordi sitting, like, what, at a table?
Well, it's at the bar, 10 forward.
Yeah, with, like, which is kind of, and that's kind of a weird shot. It's like, I don't know, maybe their regular extra was late or something, and they were like, you, kid, get on the chair.
Kid, sit in the chair. You need to talk to Geordi.
Talk to Geordi. And the kid's like, okay, I'm paid. And, like, apparently Crusher is from the moon. I don't remember where this was.
Really?
Yeah, I checked on Memory Alpha. I think it was...
She's from the moon, huh?
Yeah, I think it was in Conundrums. Which I think is, I don't know, they always talk about how there's, like, a huge city on the moon, but, like, we very rarely ever meet anyone from
the moon. Well, there's several cities, and, like, I think those are actually mentioned during First Contact. You had Tycho City, New Berlin, the places like that. But, I mean, I always understood that Beverly came from, like, Scotland or something.
Well, her family is from Scotland, but that's not where she was born.
That's true.
Her family is Scottish in ancestry. And apparently related to the Duke of York somehow.
Really?
Yeah, really. This is all in Sub Rosa. Like, Sub Rosa...
Duke of York. When did that come up in Sub Rosa?
You get, like, a whole biography of Crusher's family in Sub Rosa.
Duke of York.
You find out that, like, her parents were both killed in some kind of accident, and she was raised by her grandmother.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's like, Crusher's got that kind of backstory going on. She's also probably the easiest doctor to get along with of all of them. Because she isn't, like, super abrasive or, like, in your face or crotchety.
I think she's got an authority problem, though. Or a problem with authority.
Well, yeah, that's true. But she mainly takes that out on Picard.
Yep.
She doesn't really, like, she doesn't... And she doesn't, like, wave her rank around. And she seems to understand, except for in Descent, which for some reason she took control of the ship... She seems to understand
that she was, like, the only other senior officer on the ship at the time, is what it was. That being said, and she was bridge-trained at that point as well.
Was she?
Well, yeah, because of Thine Own Self was before that in Season 6, I think.
I don't remember Crusher ever getting bridge-training.
Thine Own Self was where... This is one where Data went to the planet and went to get the probe or whatnot, but it blew up on him, and he had, like, explosive amnesia.
Yeah, okay.
For whatever reason. I don't know how android amnesia works, but... Meanwhile, back on the ship, the actual episode opens up with Crusher on the bridge taking a watch, is what it was. Troy comes on the bridge, and Troy is there, and it's just like, why did you want to do this stuff? And Crusher's like, because I like being in command, that's why. So she's actually a bridge-trained officer this point already, I think.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you may have to double-check to see exactly what in the series it was, Thine Own Self. I think it was Season 6. It might be Season 7.
Huh. I wonder if that has any kind of parallel in actual navies. Like, I wonder if the ship's surgeon can take watches on the bridge. That seems a little weird. But for the most part...
At some point, she gets bridge-trained, because she's a commander.
Yeah, she is.
At some point. I mean, I don't think one actually necessarily has to follow the other, because she's a medical officer. I think medical officers are just, like, I do medicine, give me rank.
I mean, in real militaries, medical officers get ranks, too, but, like, for the most part, you usually have them separated from the traditional command tree, because they're not, like, full-on military officers. And usually Crusher, like, understands that and hangs out in sickbay, where her expertise are needed. Unlike, certain other characters I could mention who hang out on the bridge with their psychology degrees.
Well, Troy got promoted at the end of that episode as well, because once she completed the bridge training course,
yes, she did.
She got to be a commander instead of lieutenant commander.
I hate that training course so much. It's like, the test is to see if you can order a friend to your death. I was like, no, it's not. It's a holodeck. She knows it's not real. This entire test is pointless. Like, all this test is showing is if she's smart enough to figure out that's the correct answer. Anyway... All right, moving on from that.
Well, she still had to make the mental, jump to say, hey, can I actually do this, whether or not, And it was understanding the words, the first duty I have is to the ship.
Yeah.
Which is what I held to when I fought Klingons just a few moments ago and first cause then effect.
That's
like,
true.
Screw the triumph, I'm out of here.
And so after Crusher, we have Julian Bashir, who is... The youngest, at least in appearance, technically speaking, the doctor from Voyager is younger.
He was just out of the academy.
Yeah, he's brand new, fresh out of medical school, wet behind the ears, like, super enthusiastic. apparently some people didn't like him for that, which I thought was kind of silly. I liked him a lot. I mean, he was supposed to be a little annoying, because he's, like, you know, most of the crew at that point is very experienced, but, like, he's, you know, he's not.
This is where heroes are made, out here in the wilderness. Yeah, I love that opening speech that you had.
Because he opens up with insulting Kira and her entire people.
This is my home. We're the natives are gentle, friendly people.
I just love that. Kira just, like, rips him a new one. and he's like, ooh, ooh, ooh. But I really like Bashir. And, of course, he's genetically engineered, which sets him apart. Although I was a little disappointed that was something that they just made up. Like, that wasn't ever actually planned. They wanted to do something new with his character. And they were like, hey, guys, what if he was genetically engineered the whole time?
What if I think Ron Moore had a hand in this and was throwing darts at a board again?
Yeah. Hey, guys, what if I was a cyborg?
An infamous tactic that's been talked about when he's making BSG.
Yeah. And he's also got a lot of great friendships and some really cool, like, extra medic, like, I almost want to say extracurricular activities that don't relate to him being a doctor at all. Like his, you know, his holodeck stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Bashir, you have the doctor, because he never actually gets a name, because that's their big running gag with the doctor, is that he's always trying
played
to
play by Robert Picardo.
Yeah,
right?
By Robert Picardo from Voyager, where he's, like, the running gag is that he's trying to get a name, and he can never actually manage to get one. In the few episodes where he does get one, he always stops using it at the end of the episode, because it's, like, too painful or something. It's always linked to some kind of tragedy. But that aside, he's definitely the best.
I thought the doctor was really extreme.
Oh, so? Hmm? To tell.
Well, just in the way he's portrayed a lot of things, especially what was the one we were talking about earlier where 7 of 9 was, like, pseudo-rape or something?
Oh, Introspective. Yeah, that's the episode where 7 of 9 accuses, like, an arms merchant that they're hanging out with of, like, sedating her and, like, extracting nanoprobes, and they use the word violated, and it's clearly a rape metaphor.
Right, so, I mean, I vaguely remember the episode, but I remember the doctor reacting very, very strongly and very extremely to the whole circumstance, mostly because he has very little emotional experience dealing with these kinds of things about taking responsibility for your actions.
That episode I really love, and I was going to talk about that a little later, but now that we're on it...
No, we're getting stuck in it right now.
That episode is really good because, you know, in The Next Generation, there was sort of this trope that basically anyone could do counseling. Like, anyone can do therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Troy was kind of bad at it, but, like, Guinan just did it by definition of being Guinan, and Data could do it because he was Data. But in real life, like, it's not always that simple. Like, if you try to give someone emotional advice, like you're some kind of professional, and you're not trained and you don't know how to handle it, you can end up hurting them really badly.
Oh, yeah.
And in this episode, in Introspective, that happens. The doctor is, like, super psyched about how he's going to be the ship's therapist now, and he's read all these textbooks. Well, read, I use quotation marks. He's downloaded all these textbooks on psychology. And it's like, how hard could it be, right?
Uh-huh.
And so he's trying to get 7 to... Because at first, 7 is very logical about it. She's like, you know, okay, I remember him having this... I have this flashback where I remember him doing this to me, but we don't have proof yet. This could be a malfunction in one of my implants. So let's see how the investigation plays out. And she's very cool. And the doctor's like, no, you have to indulge your anger. You have to experience your emotions. Which, I mean, you know, you can kind of see where it's coming from. It's like, it's not good to repress yourself. But he ends up taking it way too far because he himself is not terribly experienced with his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets 7 so worked up that she goes after this guy way harder than she should be before they've actually proved anything. And the guy just thinks he's being persecuted and becomes convinced that he'll be found guilty no matter what actually happened. He tries to flee, his ship explodes, he died, and then they find pretty conclusively that he didn't do it.
Yep.
And both the doctor and 7 feel really bad about this.
As they should.
And it's a lesson in what happens when you just run away with your emotions.
Yep.
And the doctor even wants to reset his personality and effectively, like, commit suicide over the whole thing. And Janeway, and
just further perpetuating the emotional extremism train.
Yeah, exactly. And Janeway, actually, in one of Janeway's few cool moments, is like, no, Doc, you're not going to do that. You know, you're going to learn from your mistake. You're not just going to reset every time you feel bad.
You take responsibility for what you've done.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was like, when I was watching this, I was like, man, why can't Janeway be like this more often? This is like, you know, this is cool Janeway. This is like Kate Mulgrew actually getting to show that she has some acting chops going on.
Yep. And then this reminds me of another episode where, I mean, it kills me because we've already seen this example of this emotional like nonsense coming out of the doctor where he almost wants to tear himself apart, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there was an episode where he actually almost did actually like destroy himself.
I don't remember
what it was called. But there were two patients. One was Harry Kim. The other one was, like, you know, Jane Doe.
Yeah, I remember that. It was Kim and Extra Man.
Yeah. Well, Extra Woman.
Oh, was it Extra Woman?
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Anyway, so his choice was that he's only got enough time to operate in, like, one of them because they both got, like, some crazy brain contusion thing going on or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And he has to make a choice of which one's more important to the ship. And he chooses Harry Kim and saves him. The other gal dies. And the entire episode is pretty much about him trying to figure out why exactly he was missing this memory bit. Because he didn't remember this operation thing, he didn't remember anything after it, he just kind of lost time suddenly. He stumbled on it, he's like, oh, I've lost time, what's going on here? So he does this like investigation to figure out what has happened, and once he figures that out, he goes back into this cycle of trying to like rationalize why he made the decision he did, and trying to convince himself that, you know, this was the right choice, which I mean, at the time, it was the right choice to save Harry Kim over Extra Woman, because Extra Woman, I don't think, actually was as important as Harry Kim. Harry Kim is operations manager, or chief operations officer, whereas Extra Woman was not.
Extra Woman was Extra Woman. We don't know exactly.
We don't really care what she did. You know, it's the point being is that she's not as important as Harry as far as the operations of the ship is concerned, which everyone's duty is to the ship first, and not anything else. So, but apparently, because he was so like emotionally distraught over this thing, his program was literally starting to break down. Quite literally, just like no more working, and they had to like remove this memory crap out of him about that particular set of events so that he would just be a stable program again.
Do you remember how did that episode resolve? Because I remember what you're talking about, but I don't remember what else happened.
No, I don't remember how they actually fixed the problem or not.
But yeah,
it's probably because I turned it off.
the doctor is very extreme, and he actually like, you know, he doesn't do things in half measures. Like there's the episode Virtuoso. Where he almost leaves the ship to become a professional opera singer. Because basically they find this species that doesn't have music.
Oh, yeah.
And they really like the doctor, and he sings opera for them, and they think he's cool, and they're like, hey, you want to stay with us? And the doctor's like, you know, I kind of want to, but he feels torn. But he eventually decides he's going to.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, being ever helpful, are like, no, it's cool, we invented a better hologram singer.
They did.
And that's, like, the only reason why he doesn't stay is because they don't need him anymore. And so it's like, wow, the doctor does not do things in half measures.
Nope.
But Robert Picardo plays him very well. And then, of course, after the doctor, we have Phlox by,
John Billingsley.
John Billingsley.
Which I thought was, at first, the same guy who had played, what's his name? The kid in A Christmas Story at first. But that was actually Peter Billingsley, I think.
Okay.
Do you ever see Christmas Story?
I don't think so.
Oh my god, you communist. Okay, we're going to watch that at some point.
Okay.
Probably don't like apple pie either, or baseball.
I don't, actually. I don't like either of those things.
My goodness.
Baseball's boring, and I've never really cared for apple pie. Give me some pumpkin pie.
Communist.
Anyway, in Soviet Russia, apple pie eats you.
Oh my goodness.
But anyway, the Phlox is, Phlox is Phlox. He's the only alien, I suppose. He doesn't have nearly as strong a personality as the other doctors, because he's on Enterprise.
I felt he was like another Data.
Really? You think so?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear
it. It was very apparent to me in the first episode, Broken Bow.
Okay.
Which I've now, you know, learned is Broken Bow, thanks to that other episode we did.
Not Broken Bow.
I thought it was Broken Bow. I'm sorry. I was like,
no. Fail.
Alright, so it's very obvious to me that Phlox liked the really simple things about humanity, and everything from how simple like our digestive systems are to the food we eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just taking pleasure in these very little things, and that kicks me back to where Data is, where he views a lot of humanity through the eyes of a child. So a lot of those simple things, like, you know, learning to dance and stuff like that, where he's picking that up, it's represented also in Phlox, where he's looking at that stuff, humanity, going, "Oh man, this stuff is awesome. You guys are great. Nom 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 food."
You know, Bob, I have to say, I have never heard anyone describe Phlox like that before. That's, like, way deeper than I'd ever considered Phlox's character.
I mean, and it doesn't really get expanded on, though,
no,
as the series goes on, unfortunately. But, I mean, it's totally where I thought the character was going to go at first. Especially, I thought it was going to be extraordinarily appropriate, since this was, like, you know, like, Earth's first, like, deep space exploration ship. Deep space in quotations, mind you.
Right. Because
it takes like 4 days to get to the Klingon homeworld from Earth at warp 4 for whatever reason.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
It's a little known fact that between Enterprise and TOS and the Next Generation, the galaxy actually got bigger.
Yeah.
Things were smaller back in the day.
Something, I don't know. That or the 24-hour clock has been divided into, like, miniature 24-hour clocks or something.
Oh, dear. We've run out of time travel, Bob.
We've forgotten. God damn it.
But anyway, so that is a much... So, like, you're right. At the beginning, Phlox was portrayed as, like, the outside observer on humanity.
Yeah.
In the same way that Data is. And, of course, of all of them, like, the Doctor from Voyager is also very similar. He's an outside observer because he's an AI. Or, you know, they keep calling him a hologram, but that's really beside the point.
Well, because of how Voyager was structured, I think the Doctor was as... I really like the character. I really like Robert Picardo. I just thought that the character was of the Doctor was pretty schizophrenic at times.
Well, this is a fact. I mean, you know...
he is schizophrenic.
Robert Picardo can only carry the character so far. I mean, the writing of Voyager is still really bad.
I mean, I think the isolated stories of the Doctor are pretty good, but I think if you try to link them together to show some sort of character arc for the Doctor, I don't think it works very well.
Yeah.
I mean, we see the base development of, oh man, he's an AI program to he is an individual. Like, that happens, but, like, the road along the way takes so many left turns, it's just like, oh my goodness.
Well, in fairness, I mean, if you want to talk about character arcs, the Doctor and Bashir are really the only ones who have character arcs, because, like, the original series is way too disjointed to have character arcs. They're really, because they're not, the original series...
TOS was more like Adventures in Space.
Right, but it's not consistent. Like, TOS...
that's why, though, is because it was literally just, like, Adventures in Space.
Well, but, like... TNG, for example, is also Adventures in Space, but in TNG, they maintain at least a greater level of emotional continuity, where, like, the characters grow and change, whereas in TOS, it was basically they reset at the end of every episode back to what they were before.
Mm-hmm.
So McCoy couldn't really have a character arc because of that. Crusher doesn't really have a character arc either. I guess she develops from...
She has individual arcs in those episodes she's in.
Right, but they don't really ever have much of an impact on her character as a whole. Her biggest...
Well, sort of. There's only really one. That's Sub Rosa.
Yeah, that's it. She advances from being really annoying and screechy in the first season to being, you know, calmer and better to talk to in the other seasons, but that's really... That's less of a character development and more of a, hey guys, we got better writers. So, like, she doesn't really have a character development arc either. She really more plays into Picard's character development.
Yes, she does.
With episodes like Attached, where she and Picard are, you know, attached via those little neural connections. And I forget what those were originally supposed to be for, because they were put on there by the aliens as, like, what, like a tracking system or something? I don't know. I don't think they were maybe they were interrogation devices.
I don't know, but
we covered some of this in our.
I mean, it's just
episode.
Like they had like overwhelming feelings of like nausea whenever they got separated, mm-hmm. or like further than like I think like 5 meters apart from each other.
Yeah, they're basically on a string.
Yeah,
and we talked about some of this in our episode about the ladies of Star Trek, but that was Crusher's big thing was that she helped develop Picard's character. She didn't really have much development on her own. But then we have Bashir, and in my mind, Bashir has the best character arc of all of them.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, he develops from, and this is one of, like, people sometimes say they changed Bashir's story, the character from what he originally was to what he was in the later seasons, and I don't agree. He developed into what he was in later seasons. He got more experienced, he lost his naivete, and, you know, he became more reserved, especially as he witnessed greater and greater levels of tragedy. And he got more jaded as, like, I'm sure Garak would be very proud of him for that.
yeah, he would be, for sure.
I do love me the relationship between Bashir and Garak, and Bashir and O'Brien, for that matter, because they were, you know, quote, best buddies, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you have that episode when they're, you know, inside Sloane's mind and they think they're going to die, and Bashir's like, you know, I love Ezri, but I like you a little bit more. And I know you love your wife, but I think you like me a little bit more. And O'Brien's like, it is such an awesome scene.
Is that also the same episode where they're saying that, you know, if my wife was just a man, it'd be perfect?
No, but that is another episode. Okay. where O'Brien is like, why can't Keiko be more like a man? And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is so edgy. But anyway, so that's, like, you know, that's Bashir's arc. And I think that that's a really good arc, whereas the Doctor, as we were just talking about from Voyager...
Do you think that maybe a lot of the, not just Bashir's, but a lot of the characters' arcs that you see in DS9 for the characters perhaps is attributed to the way DS9 was set up,
as opposed to other shows? Most,
like, Voyager
definitely.
Was more like, hey, let's still be touchy-feely with all these characters, whereas DS9 was far more about, like, you know, sweeping change across this area of space.
Well, DS9 was, I mean, well, first of all, DS9 was controlled by Ira Stephen Baer, who is all about continuous storylines and all about flawed humans in, you know, a perfect world, which I really think was a really good direction for Star Trek. And so we got to see the characters' flaws, and then it was all about confronting them with hard choices, whereas Voyager was all about confronting them with hard choices and then giving them a third option that was completely... You know, that completely negated the moral dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
And so Voyager was afraid to take off the kid gloves in regards to their characters, and DS9 never was, which is why we get to see so much more interesting stuff going on with Bashir.
Yep.
And then eventually, you know, and it's not all, like, super grimdark stuff. I mean, Bashir eventually rekindles his relationship with Ezri, which, I hate Ezri, but...
Well, not rekindle so much.
Well,
the symbiont has changed.
He forges a relationship with Ezri.
Yeah.
Which, and even though I hate Ezri, I do like that relationship because I feel it gives some depth to both of them, mm-hmm. and it gives them both a little bit of development that Ezri really needed.
Yeah.
Even though I do find it a little creepy just because of how much Ezri looks like a 12-year-old, I gotta say I'm not a fan. She just looks so young, and I know that he's young too, but
well, he's 30.
I mean,
because he's 23, I think, when he comes aboard DS9, he's 30 at that point, whereas Ezri.
No,
I don't know what the maturation is.
He turns 30, and I think in season two, I think.
Because he's fresh out of the academy.
Well, but like he has that episode where they're all inside his mind, and like his mind is manifesting as a station that's falling apart, and that's on his third birthday, or his 30th birthday, excuse me.
Is it?
Yeah, and I don't remember what season that's
season,
in.
Huh?
I thought it was the second season, but I could be wrong. It might be further along than that. But I imagine second season because, like, I seem to remember them all having the pre-war uniforms. You know, they hadn't gotten they weren't wearing the gray uniforms yet. They were still wearing the uniforms that had the color of their department on their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pre-sixth season.
30th.
Huh. And that was his 30th birthday. So he's a little... And remember, even though he's fresh out of the academy, but he's fresh out of medical school, which means he's older when he graduates than academy students would be. Because, like, the academy is 4 years.
Well, that's why he'd be, like, 23.
Well, the academy is 4 years, and so assuming that you enter the academy at 18, the average academy graduate is going to be 22 or 23. Medical school is, I think, another 3 years after that, so you're looking at 26 or so. And, like, you know, he may have graduated early. So I
have the memory off of this.
We will. I'm going to say season 4, I think, is when he turned 30. But... After Bashir and the Doctor, you have Phlox, who unfortunately also doesn't have a character arc because he's an Enterprise, and Enterprise was completely allergic to anything regarding character development. and even in the fourth season, he doesn't really get one. I mean,
I don't know. I appreciated Captain Archer, Captain Ahab.
Oh dear. Are we talking about
season 3?
The one where he's like, "I'm gonna go into the Expanse. I'm gonna find the Time Sphere.
Yeah.
I'm gonna blow it up." And it's like. Well, I guess you could do that. I mean, it seems like it might be more appropriate to build up some defenses on Earth and have our most advanced warship there, but I guess not. yeah, that's something that Archer did. But, like, Phlox doesn't really get a lot of development past the first couple seasons. I'd like to think, at least in part, because of Dear Doctor. I'd like to think there was enough of a fan backlash after Dear Doctor, which is, incidentally, the one where they commit genocide.
Someday my people will form some sort of directive.
Some kind of directive. So, and take a brief interlude from talking about the Doctors to talk about Star Trek medical dramas in general, because this is kind of important to understand the roles of each Doctor in the show. So you've got three kinds of basic medical dramas that I like to categorize. You got the skill drama, which is the episodes that depend directly on the Doctor's skill at medicine. You got the fetch the thing drama, which is there's a thing you need that will fix the problem. And that really often has very little to do with the Doctor. That's like Spock's brain, if you want a really silly example.
Mm-hmm.
They gotta get Spock's brain back. And then you have the kind that are a moral dilemma, which is like Ethics, the one where Worf breaks his back.
Uh-huh.
Where like they have this treatment that they could use, but it's like really sketchy and it conflicts with all of Crusher's moral beliefs. So those are the three basic kinds of medical dramas. And each doctor kind of had his own thing. Like, McCoy had a lot of skill-based dramas. And then, of course, he had a couple of the others. But most of his... He didn't have a lot of moral dilemmas. Very rarely was McCoy's medical treatment ever in question. It was just like, you know, very often it's, is McCoy good enough to fix this problem? Or McCoy needs a thing to fix this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to Crusher. And Crusher didn't actually... As we pointed out before, Crusher didn't have a whole lot of medical drama episodes.
No, she didn't.
And the ones that she did have were primarily were primarily moral episodes, like Ethics, where you know her skill wasn't really in question.
Were there any others besides Ethics?
I thought there were. Maybe Ethics is. I just remember Ethics really strongly because I really hated the other doctor in Ethics because that doctor is so crazy.
Season
two,
she wasn't there. Season three. I don't recall anything. Season four.
You might be right. I might have overstepped there.
I think Ethics is the only one.
Yeah, Ethics may be the only one. In general, she doesn't have a lot of medical drama episodes. And then you have Bashir, and Bashir probably had, outside of McCoy, had the most of the moral. He had a lot of the skill ones, and then he had a fair number of moral ones. Maybe he didn't. I know he had like the quickening is one of my favorite examples of Bashir's like medical drama episodes because he has like
the Jem Hadar one too.
Right, that was a moral one. That was like...
Because I'd be aiding an enemy.
Right.
Well, sort of an enemy.
Well,
they're kind of Cold War status at that point.
It would be maybe aiding an enemy. It would be like... Well, because the idea being that, like, the last time that they encountered a group of, like, Jem'Hadar who weren't directly controlled by the Founders, those were the guys who had captured that, like, magic teleporting gate from TNG.
Yeah, Iconian Gateway.
Like, using it to blow everyone up.
Yep.
And so that episode very clearly showed that what happens when you let the Jem'Hadar off the leash is they just kill everything in their path.
They just do stuff.
And that was what O'Brien is saying in that episode, whereas Bashir is like, these people need help, you know, and of course his rationalization was that if we help them, we're weakening the Dominion, which is a fair point. I mean, if they don't have a magic teleporter, they're not going to be quite as dangerous, right?
There's an episode called Hippocratic Oath as well.
Which one was that? What happened?
I don't remember what happened in the episode, but I know there was an episode called Hippocratic Oath, which, I mean, as the title suggests...
Probably about the Hippocratic Oath. There was a... This isn't really a medical trauma episode, but Bashir also was involved in...
Oh, yeah. There was also the one with Vedic Barayal.
Right, which was...
Whereas, I could totally replace part of his brain and make a machine, or we could just let him die.
And then there
was... That was actually kind of more on Akira, though. But, I mean, because Bashir could do it, he just, like, you know, he didn't feel like it would be a good idea, though, because everything that Barayal was kind of gonorrhea at that point anyway.
Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, I could replace more of his brain with machines,
yeah.
But then you just be a machine.
Yeah.
Although that episode is kind of weird because they've established how hard it is to make fully functioning AI brains, and apparently that was something Bashir could just do.
Yep.
So that was kind of a canon violation.
No, just make him a Borg. It'd be cool, bro.
Yeah, just go get him assimilated.
Vedic Barayal Borg.
I wonder if in the future, if in Star Trek, if like getting assimilated would be like the ultimate extreme medical cure. Be like, all right,
just turn him into a Borg. Okay,
you have some kind of super extreme medical condition. There's no possible way you can live, so you're gonna go get assimilated, and then we'll try to rescue you from the collective after you've been assimilated.
Oh my goodness!
And we're gonna hope this will fix your medical problem.
Oh my goodness.
So anyway, we talked about the dramas and the character arcs. So now we get to the relationships that the doctors have with each other, with the other characters.
Pulaski and Data's is the best.
Oh my goodness, alright, we're talking about Pulaski now. I was trying to avoid this, but now Bob has brought it up. Which you can kind of sum
up. You can't talk about doctors and not talk about Pulaski.
I feel like we can.
No,
but now we
really
can't. Because you've done this, Bob.
I have done this, it's true.
This is Bob's fault. So, yeah, Pulaski and Data had a relationship, if you could call it that, where Pulaski hated Data. Why did she hate Data? We don't know. We never found out.
Used him as a tool for her own vengeful games.
But did she?
Remember Peak Performance?
No. What happened in that episode?
Stratagema?
Oh, right. Where she's like, I don't like this guy.
I don't like this guy. Hey, Data, I'm gonna stick this android robot on him. And then dick him over and make him feel like junk. Oh, he beat Data.
And to be fair, I also hated that guy.
Everyone hated that guy. But
that
I mean,
guy was a dick.
He was only one up by Pulaski, who wanted to, like, kick the guy down more. Just, like, I mean, it's just like, dang. But, you know, which backfired on Pulaski, right?
Yes, it did.
You know, and the Data then goes into his own emotional, like, wreck status. Even though he doesn't feel any emotion, he's like, oh, obviously I'm defective in some way because I didn't win at Stratagema.
I'm defective because a puny meatbag beat me at future strategy just game. Just
Pulaski spreads misery wherever she goes.
Yeah, well, that's a fact. And, like, the weirdest thing about Pulaski and Data is just that, like, again, we never ever see any kind of reason why Pulaski hates Data so much.
She's just prejudiced against machines.
But, like, there aren't any other machines walking around, so there's, like, no justification for, like, it's not that she doesn't believe Data's a person, it's that she actively hates him for being a robot. So, like, I have to wonder if
Android,
she was Android. Robot. Androids are kind of robot. I'd have to wonder if, like, maybe she was on a planet that, like, suffered a robot uprising or something. I don't know.
Oh, man. Can we make that part of the official Pulaski backstory now?
I mean, that sounds like something we do. We call up CBS.
Right, all things Trek now decrees
I'm
that
sure
she
we
was
could,
on a planet with
I'm
a robot
sure, I'm sure
uprising.
I'm sure CBS would go for it.
Yeah.
Like, hey, guys, you can put this on Star Trek Online.
I'd do it in a heartbeat. I'll make a Foundry mission.
Yeah, but anyway, that's what's up. But anyway, we're done with Pulaski. No more. No more Pulaski. Oh, goodness. Aww. And it was really funny. I guess we're not quite done with Pulaski. The funniest part about Data and Pulaski's relationship is in the episode with Sentient Moriarty. They have this opportunity to repair that relationship because, like, Data's going to prove that he can, in fact, solve Sherlock Holmes' murders because he is, in fact, a creative individual and he's not just, like, ripping off the books.
Mm-hmm.
And then they completely subverted that with this bizarre story about a Sentient Moriarty that Data wasn't even part of anymore.
Yep.
And it's like, what? Who? What's going on?
If anything, he went running to the captain.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they didn't even, like, do the most obvious thing, which would have been now Data has to match wits with Sentient Moriarty. Now, that would have been
a cool episode.
That would have been cool. A little cheesy, but it would have been cool. But instead, no, Picard's going to deal with this problem now, guys. Oh, yep. My goodness. Okay, no more Pulaski. So McCoy McCoy's role was pretty obvious, because you have, like, the big three of the original Star Trek, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
And Spock and McCoy together represent what, like, Gene Roddenberry saw as the two flip sides of humanity, and the best traits of humanity, which is that in Spock is reason.
Right.
And, you know, humanity possesses the capacity for great reason, and that's what Spock is. He's all reason. And you have McCoy, and McCoy represents compassion and emotion, and that's what McCoy is. He doesn't, even though, I mean, like, he's not stupid, obviously, but he doesn't possess a lot of objective reasoning.
Right.
He thinks with his, you know, he thinks with his heart, and he just goes with it. And then you have Kirk, who is, like, the balance between them. And so that's actually a very good, a very solid core group for your main characters. And McCoy, of course, has his, like, his great, like, you know, antagonistic relationship with Spock, where they give each other a hard time and joke each other out, which is what they were trying to do with Pulaski and Data, but they forgot that Data doesn't ever retaliate, so Pulaski was just kicking a puppy. that's what was happening. And so, you know, that's sort of McCoy's deal. And, of course, every once in a while, McCoy would run it. I think McCoy ran into an old flame at least twice in the show.
Well, there was the man trap.
Right, with the salt monster.
And what was the other one?
I thought there was one more with the... Wasn't it? No, wait. I'm thinking of What Little Girls Are Made Of, which was actually Nurse Chapel and not McCoy.
Yep.
So, all right, I guess it happened once, was that McCoy ran into an old flame.
Yep.
And so that was... And, of course, in the new movie, McCoy is not really part of that equation anymore. Now he's just... Like, in the new movie, McCoy is just, like, playing up all of his, like, memorable doctor traits.
Yep.
Which I really like. I mean, I liked McCoy in the new movie. He was easily my favorite character.
Well, they tried quite a bit, but you don't see in the new movie the Kirk Spock McCoy trifecta. You typically see, like, Kirk and Spock, or, like, McCoy and Spock, or McCoy and Kirk.
Yeah,
you don't see all three together, you know, like, chatting up.
And in fact,
but I mean, that was because it was kind of more of an origin story, and their kind of that three way relationship hadn't developed yet at that point.
And in fact, as Sci-Fi Debris pointed out, for some reason Red Letter Media pointed out, for some reason in the new movie they felt the need to cut McCoy out of the opening, the promotional poster. The poster,
oh, really?
Yeah, in the poster it's Kirk, Spock, and Uhura. And it's like, wait, Uhura? Uhura's barely in this movie. Like, she's there, but she doesn't do anything.
I feel that was a a move on some sort of maybe agent.
Yeah, well, obviously,
or marketing director.
Because having
part.
having three dudes on the poster was gay, and we had to have a woman there to ensure us that we are all in fact comfortably heterosexual. Anyway, I'm gonna move away from that topic.
That being said, I don't really find her attractive.
No, I don't either. I find
she's really thin.
Her arms terrify me. Like that shot of like anytime they show her arms, and they do all the time because the uniform sleeves are really short on the ladies. Her arms look like sticks.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like she's gonna break her bones every time she reaches to grab something.
Yeah.
So I wasn't
she a dancer.
Maybe, I don't know. Especially after, and it was such a huge letdown after Nichelle Nichols, who was like ripped and is like, you know, it's actually like, you know, is built pretty well.
Yep.
But and we covered this in our Star Trek Ladies episode. So anyway, big disappointment on that. But after McCoy, you have Crusher, who is a bit of a step down in relationships because she only really has two relationships that are consistent, and that is her relationship with Picard, her relationship with Wesley. And no one cares about a relationship with Wesley, because it's with Wesley. so by definition, no one likes it. And we covered a bit about how she's this foil to Picard. They have this sort of never-to-be-fully-realized romance, which for some reason they chose not to follow up on in Insurrection. I guess because they felt like they were already resurrecting one dead romance, they didn't want to resurrect two.
Well, we have two examples of them going further
mm-hmm.
with that. One was in All Good Things.
Yeah, that's
right,
true.
Where, I mean, that future didn't actually happen.
No, they did get married in that future.
They did get married in that future. And then there's the Star Trek Online CBS stuff.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
talking about Star Trek Online, guys.
I mean, I don't know. Star Trek Online is kind of very nebulous uh-huh. in regards to that. But CBS seems to have to need Cryptic to have all this stuff approved by them before they put it in the game for whatever reason. That suggests to me that there's actually a lot of elements in Star Trek Online that are canon or have to be canon, or CBS looks at it and goes, yeah, this is canon. I don't actually know if that's true or not, but I mean, we got the next Enterprise F, which you refuse to believe is the next thing.
It's not real until it's on television.
But anyway, like in the book called Needs of the Many, which is like this history kind of thing told mm-hmm. from Jake Sisko's actually perspective.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I can let you borrow and check out. It's just kind of documenting like a lot of events that are leading up to Star Trek Online. But we're seeing Picard and Beverly's son actually talking to Jake mm-hmm. in the vineyard. So Picard and Beverly's son is totally taking care of the vineyard in France now.
Oh my.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And it's like, God, what was the name? It was like Rene Riker Troy Picard or something like that.
Yeah, that's,
it was some absurdly long name that had more names in it.
That's
than
especially
that.
Funny because, like, by the end of the show, Picard is what, in his 50s? So,
something like that.
Sometime after that, he had a kid.
Yep.
Can you imagine like being a kid and being like 5 and your dad is 60?
Yep.
That would be so weird.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so those are the two examples that I know of where they mm-hmm. it seems like it's pretty heavily suggested that they do go on and, you know, like get together and such. I mean, that's not the indication we get at the end of Nemesis, mind you, where Crusher is at Starfleet Medical and then Picard goes flying away on the Enterprise E again.
But what about Picard's precious relationship with Space Amish Woman?
Space Amish Woman.
In Insurrection, remember? He totally loves Space Amish Woman.
Yeah.
And they have a precious relationship that will obviously withstand the test of time.
No.
All right, no. All right. I don't believe
that. It's one of those one-time movie relationships that, you know,
I think we'd all be better off just forgetting that movie ever happened. That one, you know, and Nemesis, too.
Oh, no, it gave us Space Bazooka.
It did give us Giant Purple Space Bazooka.
I approve of that.
Which has the power to launch 4 entire extras into the air. Or at least make them jump into the air. It's not entirely clear.
Yeah.
And so after Crusher, we have Bashir. And Bashir has much more interesting relationships than Crusher does, in that he has his relationship with O'Brien, with Garrick, and with Dax. And those are his three big relationships. And he also, you know, he also talks with the other members of the crew. Like, none of the crew are ever walled off from each other, but those are the three that are really tested. We talked about already how much we like the relationships between Garrick and Bashir, because Garrick is awesome, and anything that involves Garrick is really going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And Garrick is a very important foil for Bashir's development. And then his relationship with Dax I really enjoy as a development from, you know, one-sided romance, where Bashir is like, I want to sleep with you, And Dax is like, not really interested, because, you know...
she enjoyed just being chased.
Yeah,
I think she liked that part.
She did. I mean, you know, ego boosting.
Yep.
And then that kind of transforms into a more stable friendship where they both put that part of their lives behind them, and they're like, we're going to be friends now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, of course, O'Brien, and where they start off hating each other, and then they, like, or at least they start off with O'Brien hating Bashir, anyway.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that relationship builds slowly. I really appreciated that episode because it didn't have a we're best friends now moment. Like, there was never an episode where at the end of it, O'Brien and Bashir were best friends.
It was a very natural development.
Yeah. Like, the closest thing to that was the episode where O'Brien had to be the Bajoran messiah for that one village. He had to send the giant cloud formation away, and like they kind of like each other more at the end of that episode, but they're not like super best friends.
Yeah.
And so that relationship was allowed to develop very naturally. And then you get to the Doctor from Voyager, who has really kind of two relationships that matter. At first, he has his relationship with Kes. And which is like, because Kes is of course the one where who originally like agrees to see him as a person, whereas the rest of the crew just thinks he's a tool, and a tool that doesn't really work either.
Mm-hmm.
And like, then of course Kes leaves, Seven of Nine steps in and immediately continues Kes's tradition of being the Doctor's best friend. Because I don't know what they were doing with that. I guess they realized...
I feel that Doctor and Tom Paris are pretty buddy-buddy.
Yeah, they did have some relate. That was kind of fun. I wish there'd been more of that.
And by buddy-buddy, I mean that the Doctor was Tom Paris's boss that hated him being tardy all the time.
Because for some reason, Paris was the chief pilot and the medic.
And the medic and the commando team leader.
Well, there's nothing Paris can't do. And I did, you know, Paris and the Doctor did have some occasionally funny moments. If only because Paris actually had some good dialogue. I'd say Paris's dialogue was better than most of the crew's. But it is sort of jarring that, like, the writers clearly realize that now that they gotten rid of Kes, the Doctor had no one to talk to. And they were like, well, we just brought in this new lady. She'll be his friend now. But then, of course, they actually do some interesting stuff with that, where they sort of...
I think that was just more of a relatability thing, because the Doctor had just, like, come into his own with his own, I guess you could say, quote-unquote, humanity or so, and then there was this fresh-faced, you know, new member of the crew who had never really had the chance to be her own person, because she was, you know, assimilated when she was, like, 6 or 7 or so, right?
Yeah.
You know, so he's like, oh man, well, I found this really cool thing called humanity. I'll help you find it.
One other thing that I liked about the Doctor that he had in common with Bashir was they both had very active fantasy lives, which I thought was kind of cool. I mean, and the Doctor's got a little creepy at times, but like, you know, it was clear that they both wanted to be more than they were, and I think that worked for each of them in its own way. Whereas we never really got to see much of the hopes and dreams of the other Doctors. It was just sort of like, you know, we just sort of assumed that Crusher would want to become head of Starfleet Medical or captain of a medical ship for some reason. What? I don't know what's up with that.
Seems like a step down from being the head of Starfleet Medical.
Well, for some reason, Star Trek believes that the natural advancement of everyone's career is to be captain. Because, like, being a doctor makes you... It's like, because it's all about keywords, right? Because, like, a medical ship, that means you need to be a doctor to be in charge of it. They're really emphasizing medical and leaving out the ship part. But other than that, we never really got to see what Crusher really wanted from life, or what, you know, McCoy really wanted other than a mint julep, what Phlox wanted. And getting to Phlox doesn't really have any relationships with the other members of the crew other than a moderate relationship with DePaul, where they reminisce about how they're the only aliens on the ship and how much humans are dumb. But other than that, he didn't really have much of a relationship going on. He had, like, the beginnings of one with the B-cast member, Cutler, but then they axed that right quick. And they just never brought it up again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what's going on with you, Phlox? You doing anything over here? No? Okay.
No? All right.
And I have to stop. We have to stop ending these discussions on Enterprise. It's always so depressing. It's like, oh, look, and then we get to Enterprise.
We can talk about Pulaski again.
Oh my goodness, Pulaski! Pulaski had even.
Well, we did. We started the discussion with Pulaski.
Yeah, we did. This is your fault. We can't bookend this with Pulaski. I won't let it happen. Man, you know what was cool? Our man Bashir. That was a cool episode.
That was a cool episode.
And had Bashir in it, and he was being awesome. And, like, really... So, I think if I was going to give the Doctors of Star Trek, like, a grade, I would put Bashir at the top, and then, like...
This is a grade on a curve.
Yeah, the Doctor, like, underneath, and then... Or, wait, no, what am I talking about? Bashir, then McCoy. I'm sorry, I forgot McCoy existed for a second. Bashir, McCoy, the Doctor, Crusher, and then Phlox, like, a couple rungs down. Mm-hmm. And I am really hoping that there is going to be another Star Trek series, and I'd really like to see what they're going to do with the Doctor.
The old young cast.
Okay, I'm gonna forget that we ever saw that in the press release, because I don't know what that was supposed to mean.
Okay.
So hopefully that won't be a thing. Uh-huh. And I'm interested to see what they do with the Doctor. I'd like to see another Lady Doctor, preferably one that is better than Crusher and Pulaski. I'd like to see another Alien Doctor, but like maybe one go a little different direction than Phlox.
We need another DS9 is what we need.
I would really like another DS9. I would like them to just make DS9 again. Just release DS9 again and be like...
Continuing Adventures of DS9, this time minus Sisko.
No Sisko. No more Sisko.
Just hire everyone back except Avery Brooks.
Oh dear. Alright, so...
Instead of guest starring Space Jesus.
Oh my goodness. Speaking of Space Jesus, next week, because I haven't gone on a rant for a while, and the need for a rant, I'm going to rant about the three things in DS9 that pissed me off the most. And I picked DS9 because it's my favorite Star Trek show, and I don't want to feel like I'm just picking on Enterprise and Voyager. So
everyone's going to get their comeuppance.
Yeah, they'll get there eventually, but I'm going to rant about Ezri Dax, the story of Space Jesus, and the last story arc of Quark's mom. Because those are the three things about DS9 that I hate the most. So anyway, if you want to hear me rant...
I do enjoy me a good Orin rant.
...and get really angry about those things, you will join us next week at All Things Trek.
That's right.